Welcome to Crane Radio. Celebrate a life well lived.
Welcome to Season 2 of The Modern Crone, the rise of the energy arts. This season, I'm talking with the most highly regarded and established energy healers that I know about their views on energy, the psyche, and the dazzling capacities of the human system. We will be exploring 6 different energy healing modalities, and together we'll take the energy arts from woo-woo to wow-wow and deepen the narrative of what I and many believe to be the future of healing and wellness science. I hope you feel inspired. It is my pleasure to introduce our guest for this episode, Kalinka Palan Jacobs. Kalinka co-founded Yes over 2.5 years ago, a British consultancy based in London, specialising in mindsets and behavioural changes for organisations. Through Yes, she has trained directly or indirectly through online training over 400,000 people in over 85 countries, helping them work together more effectively and more harmoniously. Yes's clients include some of the world's largest international groups. And Kalinka is trained in diverse disciplines, including the Access Consciousness Certified Facilitator Training, including bars and body processes, Eric Pearl's Reconnective Healing Training, the Kinslow System, Theory U, Psychogenealogy and Shamanism. She offers private sessions and classes to help everyone, wherever they are in their life, create the life that really turns them on. Kalinka Palan Jacobs, welcome to Season 2 of The Modern Crone, the rise of the energy arts. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Danny. Delighted to be here.
And you're beaming into this podcast from the beautiful French Alps, you lucky thing. What's it like there?
Very foggy today, can't see the mountains, but yesterday was divine. We had the full view.
Oh, how divine. And the snow's still good?
Not so good. It's like the end of it, but we had a good run. Yes,
lucky
we did.
Thing. All right. Well, I could talk about the French Alps all day, but we're really here to talk about the energy arts. So let's get into it. So, well, one thing that I love about your offering, Kalinka, is that you combine a lot of amazing modalities, but in particular, you've managed to bridge the energy arts into organizations and collective behaviors. And I know what you do is quite complex. It's quite a broad spectrum of offerings, but could you describe for our listeners what it is that you offer?
Well, there's so many ways to answer this question, really. If I answer from the point of energy arts, what I do is I look at organization like a body, the same way I would do a session with an individual. I look at an organization as a big body. And this big body, for some reason, wants to change something about parts of its body. And so we listen to what the change is about and what blocks that change. And then we offer ways to transform that body into what it really truly wants to be. So it's really the same between organizations or individuals. For me, there's no difference. So it's just a bigger body, basically.
That's amazing. You know, and in a lot of these podcasts that I've been doing for this season, there's always been this, the conversation's always gone into the collective, you know. So there's this understanding with all of the energy healers that I'm talking to that when an individual goes into a healing journey, it's not exclusively just for them. It's also contributing, if you like, to collective healing. So is it the same kind of dynamic really that you're talking about when you're talking about healing organizations of people?
Yes, totally. We're all connected. We are one. We are one. So when something changes somewhere, it's going to affect everybody. And we see it more and more because our world is showing us how connected we are. Look at what's going on in Russia right now. It's affecting everyone.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And really galvanized the West as well, hasn't it? The pandemic didn't do it, but the war in Russia certainly has.
Totally. So every change in every individual, and especially when it's a collective individual, will have an impact on everybody else. So that's why initially we wanted to work with my husband with organizations, because we saw those are the big groups today, which have many effects on society, whether through their products or their services. Mm-hmm. And when you change them, when you change their energy, it affects a lot of people.
Yeah, fantastic. So a wider field of influence. Mm-hmm. Sophie, mm-hmm. We should probably tell our listeners that you and I have known each other for a long time. So a long, beautiful time. So we met in London, how long ago? Probably 25 years ago, about?
Oh, my God, yes. 25 years ago.
I know. And we shared the ownership of a garden, which was absolutely a beautiful experience, as we were both really sort of leaning into what was our purpose and where were we heading in life. And we've both arrived into a life of service for others, a life of healing, a life of transformation and facilitating transformation with individuals and groups. But could you tell our listeners a little bit about your journey into the energy arts?
Oh, my journey into the energy arts. Well, I suppose it starts during a world trip that I did when I was around 25.
Yep.
I went away for 2 years and many things happened to me. And amongst them, I had two particular experiences that really influenced me and changed my view of the world. The first one was in India. I just arrived in India and I woke up very early, very excited to see India. I had traveled for about a year and a half already. And I was amazed by how foreign everything seems, like from another planet. I was looking at people in the street and not understanding what they were doing. And so I was walking in the street and I turn a corner and I have this guy in front of me. He's in a box. He has no legs. He's in this box with roulettes and he has those things to move the box around. And I'm behind him and I'm thinking, oh God, poor guy. I don't see that in my country. You know, we don't see that anymore. Mm. And I'm like having compassion for him. And then somebody calls him and he turns his head. And I see this guy's head, which is beaming with an amazing joy, an amazing happiness. Mm-hmm. An amazing piece that I had never seen before. And I had two shocks. The first one was, what? How can this guy be so happy?
Yeah.
He has no money, he has no education, he has no legs, he has nothing of what my culture says to me, I need to be happy. He has nothing of it. Mm. So where does that come from? And the second one was that, well, what is this? What is this? And this seemed to be the most precious thing for me in my life. Mm. And that turned my life into, okay, from now on, this is what I'm going to seek.
Yeah, beautiful.
Joy, pure joy. And then the second one was a few months later, actually, still in India. I happened to be in a massive gathering of Tibetan people. There were about 60,000 Tibetan monks there. Called the Kalat Chakra Initiation, which happens every 12 years, and it's led by the Dalai Lama. Mm. And there were a few foreigners there, and I was part of that little group, about 100 of us or something. And we had a week of teachings from the Dalai Lama. I didn't understand everything, but something really touched a chord, and he was talking about Shambhala. Mm. Shambhala in the Tibetan tradition is like a sort of paradise where enlightened beings live. Mm. And he was saying, we can create Shambhala here and now, in this life. But to create Shambhala, we have to find Shambhala within. Mm. You can't create Shambhala without finding Shambhala within. And when I heard that as a 25-year-old, I thought, why has nobody told me that before? Mm. Why is Shambhala not the purpose of everyone on the planet? Mm. Why don't we talk about that? Why do I have to be 25 on a world trip to hear about that for the first time? I thought it was amazing. And then the second thing was I made a big choice. I thought, okay, I'm going to find Shambhala within because I want to contribute to create that Shambhala without. Mm. And that led me to where I am now. I'm still searching for Shambhala in many ways. I've spent the last over 25 years now clearing my own within to be able to give something of value to others and participate in that creation of Shambhala.
That's beautiful.
On the planet.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah, it is that there are these poignant experiences within your journey that almost it almost requires retrospect though to see that they seemed destined, didn't they? Like I have similar experiences too where it was a real wake up as I progressed along and definitely directed the direction that I was taking, although I may not have been fully aware of it at the time, but looking back I just go, yep, I turned a corner there, I changed direction there. Yes. You know, it's just amazing, isn't it? It's beautiful actually, because it's quite affirming that you're being held in some way by a greater intelligence, but perhaps the energy of Shambhala itself is pulling you along a little bit. Oh, so good. So, I mean, you offer both personal healing for individuals, which we are going to get to in this chat, but also global healing through your relatively newer program called Choose. Could you explain what this is about? Because we've talked about it and you said you've gone through testing with teenagers in schools and you're getting ready now for it to launch at large. Could you tell our listeners what Choose is about?
Yes, sure. Choose was born after working through my company, yes, with a large organization, mainly adults. And the more I worked with adults, the more I thought, God, if we could give some information and tools to young people, they wouldn't be where they are like 20 years later, where I meet them. Maybe we could empower them in a different way. So I was really interested to help the youth. So when I moved from London to France. I'm now currently living in Aix-en-Provence. And I thought that could be the moment where I started to dedicate myself to that. So I started to work with young people about 2.5 years ago, creating a program which was a mix between what I had learned in the organization field, but also with really the energy work I was doing, because I wanted to mix them much more closely. And so I did a test in the International School of Provence with about, there were about 40 students that went through that test. And it was really interesting. They loved it and we could really see the changes. So then I tested on adults to see if the program would be different for adults. And no, it was quite similar. So the core of the program is to remind people of the immense power of their choice. Mm. Remind them what powerful creators they are, but most of them are unconscious of that power. So now we are ready to, through all those tests, we are now ready to put that online, and we're going to start the first journey online in September.
Fantastic. I just can't wait to see it. So let's go back to this power of choice. So you described it when we talked last, you said to me that our choice is our ultimate magic wand, which I absolutely agree with. But could you explain what you mean by that?
Well, choices, our lives are made through our choices, right? We make, apparently, I don't know how they measure that, but we make about 50,000 choices per day. I have no idea how they measure it, but that's what they say. So 50,000 choices per day, most of them are unconscious. So we create our lives through those choices without even realizing we are creating them. So if you bring a bit of consciousness through those choices, which has been my journey through the past 25 years, if you bring a bit of consciousness through the choices, you start to see how amazingly, A, powerful they are.
Yep.
And B, how my journey was to understand that it's our birthright. It's part of our design. It places us in a bigger context as co-creator of reality. So I'm very interested to help people really understand that and start not only to create the lives that really says yes to them, but also to co-create a life that brings us more to Shambhala, you know?
I love this. You know, in season one, I talked with, as you know, because I think you listened to it, to a number of different shamanic teachers. And one of the themes that came through was that we have a responsibility to create. And we create through action. And that's what a choice is. And so, you know, a lot of the sort of new age kind of manifestation stuff, there's a lot of emphasis on getting your intention right, doing your vision board, visioning what you want, and maybe even tapping into your desire. But then not so much on that third activating principle of actually embedding those things into your choices. And I love that you're the central focus of Choose, which is obviously a fantastic name for the program, is about that, is about how are you hook weaving into your life and into the collective field through your actions, these visions. It's just so powerful. And then the other thing that I keep thinking of with Choose too, because I've thought about a lot since we spoke, is, you know, the chakra that governs our action, our confidence, our autonomy is the third chakra. It's the fire chakra, Manipura. And this is so active in youth as well. Like in the Kundalini framework, it's the chakra that boots up in youth. So dealing with youth and in the context of their choices, I think is just fantastic.
And actually, we started to work with students which are about 16, 17 year old, because that's the moment they are asked to make choices for their lives, right? Yeah. The choice of career, of universities and everything. And they have absolutely no training in how to make a choice. So what happens is that most of them, unless they have like parents which have been like nourishing love and confidence in them, most of them make choices out of fear. Mm. Fear of not finding a job, fear of not being good enough, fear of, you know, the world. What I was really amazed about is the students I was working with, how many were anxious about the future.
Yeah.
So anxious. And I found it so sad and poignant. So I wanted really to help them understand that we create that future, and they are the one who are going to create the future. You know, the youth are the future of tomorrow. So we need to empower them so that their actions and their choices come from a place of confidence, love, connection, understanding that they have a right to a beautiful life and they can create it.
So beautiful.
And it's not because the previous generation made choices that led to the world we know today that we have to keep on making the same choices.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that level of anxiety that you've seen with the youth that you've worked with has, you know, I mean, it has to have been amplified by the pandemic, because a lot of perhaps pathways where they may have seen themselves go down, like travel or study overseas, you know, were very suddenly closed off. How much is the pandemic playing into that youth anxiety? Or do you just think it's sort of like a general malaise of today's youth?
Well, I think it's not only youth, I think it's everybody. Yeah. You know, everybody is going through massive change right now. It's like we're going through the plagues. You know, we had the fires in Australia, then we had the pandemic, now we have the war. Yeah. What else is coming? So we are going through a massive transformation. And I think as my take on it, and I don't say the truth, that's my take, I think we are offered different choices.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I have confidence that humanity is going to make that choice for a higher possibility for all. And we are all like bathing in this fear or trust, fear or anxiety or trust and stepping up and making new choices. And we all have those choices to make at the moment. We are all in it.
Yep.
And youth, of course, they are affected by that. But like everybody else is affected. We are all affected. And we are all going through common experiences. The first time the pandemic was for me an interesting experience because it was the first experience we all shared on the planet. You know, yeah. It's like a bonding exercise, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So working with younger people and, you know, teenagers, do you think this next generation is more open to the energy arts?
Well, I think nobody is more open or less open because energy is our first language. That's how we operate as babies. So we are energy and we know that language, we just forgotten, so adults and youth. But what was interesting for us when we work with youth is that they're a bit like, ooh, when you talk about those things, like adults, you know. But when we asked them what did they love the most through the program, it was meditations,
yeah.
Where we really took them on a journey into feeling them as much more expanded beings and operating from a much more energetical system, and they love that.
Yeah, I mean,
so if you tell them like with the mind we're going to work with energy, they're a bit like ooh, because they're not used to it like adults would be. But when you put them in that world, when you give them a context in which they can experience it, they love it.
Yeah,
they really love it. They dig it.
Yeah, so. Totally. My take is that this next generation coming through is far more open to exploring alternative, what's the word, you know, practices, connecting with their energy. I mean, yes, of course, we're all energy. What I'm talking about is paradigms. And I'm seeing more and more younger people coming into the healing rooms, coming into my courses for meditation, for Reiki.
Mm.
So I think some of that may be because they've grown up with a much more open narrative about meditation and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were young, it just wasn't even on the sort of in the dialogue, you know. It was you had to go and seek it like you did traveling or like me finding my teachers and so on. But these guys, I think, have really grown up with a much more sort of, I don't know, it's been present in the narrative. It's been in the corporates. It's been, and so there's sort of just like it's a more general acceptance that it's there at least and an openness to give it a try.
Mm. Well, it wasn't my experience where I worked with the teenagers I worked with. But yeah. What I saw is that they're much more loving, much more accepting of each other. They're not into the competitive and I'm better than you. There's a different way to operate, and they will create something different out of that. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for beautiful. Sure. That's beautiful. I do think as well they're far more environmentally aware, generally.
Oh,
speaking.
Yes.
So they've been educated much more explicitly in environment and environmental impact than we were. Don't we sound like a pair of old ducks when we were at school?
Runnies.
We are, but I'm happy being a crone.
Tired of working from home? Maybe you're just looking to add some scenery to your morning commute. Instead of just walking from your room to your bathroom to your kitchen to your room, add a stop at Crane, where you can work, play, dine, shop, and socialize within restrictions at $99 a month.
Could we move now a little bit to access consciousness? Because this is, I don't have anyone else on this podcast that's speaking to access consciousness, and I know there are different levels of it, and I know you're trained all the way through to being able to train others in it. So I came across access consciousness before I knew that you had found your way to it, and a friend of mine was trained in the bars technique, and she gave me a treatment when she was staying with me in my home here in Singapore, and I couldn't believe how powerful it was. So it's a very, very powerful energy modality. Can you explain to us in a simplified way what is access consciousness and what's the difference between bars and the body processes?
So access consciousness, it's like how it's written on the tin. It's about helping you access consciousness. So it's quite clear what the purpose is here. So the basis, you know, I've been trained through, you could talk about it for months, but I'm going to try to be simple there. So the basis is that we are infinite beings with infinite choices and infinite possibilities. That's how you are perceived from the access consciousness point of view. That's what we are.
Yep.
And so if we are infinite being with infinite choices and infinite possibilities, if we want to create something and we can't, it's because we have conclusions, judgment, expectations that are blocking that to happen. So those judgment, conclusion, expectations are literally energy blocks that you can find in the body.
Yep.
And you have certain points on the head which crystallize those energy blocks. So the energy bars are just a way to tap into those points and release the pressure, like in a pressure cooker, if you want.
Yep.
You create a field between those points, which allows this crystallization, this kind of density, to release itself.
Yep.
And it's the same. It's the same in the body. Also, in the body, you have processes where you just call upon certain energies, which have been researched by the creator of access consciousness. Access consciousness, and you can tap into those energies, and it's really fun because you have this book basically with the body processes where you have like hundreds of them, and you just listen. You put your hand on the body and you just listen to what the body wants.
Yep.
And while you do that, you close your eyes and you put your hand on the book where you have all the processes listed, and you just listen when the energy expands. And when it expands, you look at the body process and you go on page 232 and you look at what the body process is, and then you call that energy in.
Beautiful.
And the energy comes immediately, which is always for me magical. I love it when you call upon an energy and puff, it's there.
Yeah.
And it has always a very distinctive frequency. And then you just bring that frequency into the body until the body has absorbed enough of it to remember that this frequency is available too, you know.
Yeah.
And
harmonious with the system. So what are the typical things that people might come to? Because you mentioned before, you know, if someone's experiencing a life that's not of their desire or design, and because they have a judgment, an expectation, or a fear that's crystallized within them, do people come and see you with illnesses as well?
Yeah, it can be anything. Because from the point of view of access consciousness, everything is energy. So it doesn't matter what it is. It could be physical, mental, emotional. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't, It's like I don't need to understand it. I just need to connect with the density of it. That's all, because it has a density to it.
Yeah.
And a really great tool in Access is light and heavy. What's light is true for you, what's heavy is not.
Yep.
And something can be light to me and heavy to you, and vice versa. It's not absolute.
That's where the non-judgment is important. The non-judgment there is important, isn't it? Because it's not formulaic. There's no sort of list of right or list of wrong.
Exactly. And that's a very important aspect when you start healing, is to be totally out of judgment, expectation, yourself as a healer, to totally accept the person as she is, where she is, with no judgment, conclusion, expectation, whatever, whatsoever, about her choices, where she is in her journey, just looking at what's dense, what's light, and what is she ready or is ready to transform, and not offer something more.
Because they've got to be ready.
That doesn't work.
They've
got to be ready.
I would say that attitude and resonance of the healer would be true in all energy healing modalities. I mean, I certainly see it in my Reiki work and in my shamanic healing work. You know, if I've got even the tiniest bit of contraction in my heart in relation to the client, the energy just doesn't flow. Whereas
it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. So I've got to find a way where I can absolutely honor them and be present to them as they are now.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when you've felt into a density, you know, something that's heavy within the system or the energy body or the mind of one of your clients, how do you determine what they're ready to transform? Is there a conversation happening at the same time, or is it all determined by the movement of the energy?
Well, some people like to talk and some people don't like to talk. Some people want to know what's going on and some people don't care. They just want to be fixed. Some people go only for the energy, and then it's quite easy to follow the energy because the energy knows what it knows. And some people want to have more a mental also understanding, a cognitive understanding of what's going on.
Yeah.
And then it's just through questions and choices, really. It's a lot of it is through questions and offering a different choice, saying, okay, so making the person aware of the densities and where they're blocking, and then offering them a different choice. And what I also add very often is put them into a context, because a lot of people don't realize that what they're going through, a lot of other people are going through exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
They think they are the only one who are like that, but not at all. There's so many other people going through exactly the same thing. So what I've added to also my modality is I made them aware of how many other people on the planet are going through exactly the same thing, exactly the same thing, and how them releasing that is contributing immensely to the evolution, the positive evolution of humanity. And that touches people also deeply when they realize they're not alone.
Yeah, and there's such a liberation in that, isn't there? Yeah. So we've talked before about, you know, this unconscious patterning, which a lot of which is picked up from our early years, family and culture of origin, and early year experiences as well. Have you been in a situation where a client is not prepared to look at those unconscious patterns because they've got so much identity and story built on top of them? And if so, how have you approached that?
Well, lots of people are not ready to do some big jumps or big transformation, but they're ready. If they are coming to me, they're ready to do something.
Yeah.
And we just work with that something, even if it's a baby step, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There's movements. There's something moving in the system. And if they are coming in that situation with me, they are ready to move something. So we're going to just move what it is they're ready to move. Yep. And that's enough. That's perfect.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So
that's, I love that.
So I just look for that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I often say that to the healers in my community as well, is to remove from yourself the idea that you're the last stop, the fix everything, and accept that you're, first of all, it's kind of happening despite of you, but also that you're a step along the journey for this person. You know, you walk alongside them for a certain time. They may well then move into a different pathway of healing, or open up to sort of different, or indeed, you know, fully heal from whatever it is that they came in for. But I think that's really beautiful, just going for some form of movement and acknowledging that they're coming to you because they're ready to move something, and that's enough, you know. Yeah, that's really beautiful. Okay, so a lot of your teaching is done demonstratively and through story. Could you, which I love, and role playing and so on, and I know you and your husband Richard, you know, have done role playing for years within organizations, but just in terms of the principle of how effective a method of teaching role playing and drama and demonstration and story is, can you tell us a bit about that? Why is story so powerful?
Well, stories are the way we can share emotions. We can share moments of like haha moments, moments where we have been touched, moments where we understood something, moments which changed us. So through stories, we can share a lot about who we are and what we can do. If I ask you, for example, you know, just share with me a story that really changed your life. You're going to engage with a story, with you're going to remember the emotion state you were in when that thing happened, and you can transmit that to me in a unique way beyond the cognitive, you know? And I think that's why stories are powerful. And also I think stories shows us what's possible that we haven't chosen before.
Yeah.
You know, if you tell me the story about what moved you or has changed you, I'm going to be, I didn't know I could choose that. I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah.
You know, for me, for example, a story that happened to me years ago, like in my 20s, I was climbing and I couldn't go over overhang. I was losing my energy and I was like, oh my God, I couldn't find where to put my hands. And then I was like really starting to panic.
Yep.
And then I just said, hands, find it. Yeah. And my hands went straight to a place.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, my hand knows something I can't see with my eyes.
Yeah.
And it was like, God, wow. And it opens a world of energy for me. You know, I was like, wow, who knows where that thing was? There's a part of me that knows it's, yeah, that's not my visual sense.
Yeah.
So when I tell that story, I can share with you something about my understanding, about something that was beyond my knowledge that is unique. It's like I can explain to you in a metaphor something that really opened my eyes, you know, for example.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that story, which is an excellent segue into my next question, which is something that I've asked everyone that I'm talking to on this podcast. This seems to be a universal experience. So for you, well, first of all, we're going to go into intuition. So in your, and I know you use lots of modalities, but with access consciousness and that beautiful explanation that you gave us around, you know, density and lightness and finding where it is and then creating that triangulation with the access consciousness, you know, body process book, and then them connecting in an energetic way, which I think is super cool. How much of that is intuitive? So, I mean, it sounds all intuitive, but there's, I guess I'm making a distinction between what you can sense in terms of what the energy is doing, which is an intuitive sense, I agree, but there's another layer, like a finer layer of intuition, I believe, around like a gnosis of what you're dealing with. So How much of your healing work with your individual people is intuitive, would you say?
Well, I think it's all. For me, it's difficult to distinguish. Mm. I think, you know, I spent the last, 20 years refining my perception of energy. So it's really refining my listening.
Yeah.
Listening, really deep listening to what's going on, and with the understanding that you're not separated from others, so you can dive into whatever you need to dive without attachment to form. So when I do healing, I forget about myself. I become one with whoever is in front of me, and I have an intent, and then information comes in. And for me, that's the beauty of our choices. Again, it's like, whatever you focus your attention on with a clear intent from your heart, the information that is perfectly relevant to it is going to come to you.
Yeah.
And it's all about just listening to it without any distortion of your own making. You know, so the whole journey is about being able to get out of yourself and your stuff and your things and go into this kind of pure space of listening. That is only related to your intent, in this case, to help that person in front of you access its next level or her next level, whatever that might be.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whether you understand it or not, whether you know it or not, doesn't matter. It's like you just place intent, place the choice, align yourself with that, and then the information comes.
Yeah, it comes, you know? And it's accurate too, isn't it? So do you, what would you say are your own personal practices to cultivate this ability to move into that frame of oneness, of lightness, of non-judgment, of being, of blending with the energy of your client? So what do you do as a healer to cultivate that ability?
I pay an extreme attention to what excites me.
Nice.
Because I believe that what excites me is for a reason.
Yeah.
Because it's aligned with my purpose.
Yeah.
So when I see something that excites me, I'm like, okay, there's something for me here that I need to put my attention on.
Yeah.
You know, so for example, this week, skiing, I wasn't planning at all to go skiing.
Yeah.
But the opportunity came and it totally excited me. So I was like, okay, that's it. I'm gonna go.
Yep.
So I've learned to release my mental and really follow what makes my heart sing.
Yeah, beautiful.
Because if it makes my heart sing, it means that there's something for me beyond my cognitive understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one of my big practices. I pay attention to what excites me.
Yeah, beautiful. You excite me, Kalinka.
Likewise, honey.
it's been a couple of decades of excitement. It's just so gorgeous. I love it. Have you found that the more your life has moved into deeper and deeper exploration of the energy arts, that in general your intuition has really amped up? So not just particularly when you're engaged with healing work or with transformative work with clients, but just generally in your life, you know, as you go about your day, as a mother, as, you know, as a wife.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I even, you know, even when I'm walking with my dog, Stanley, which I do every day, sometimes the wind goes through me and I have some information coming through that wind that comes from the other side of the planet.
Yeah, beautiful.
And I'm aware of something there.
Yeah, yeah.
Suddenly, you know.
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. Absolutely beautiful. Mm. Yeah. Oh, my goodness, so many questions. Okay, so for those who might be listening to this and going, wow, that all just sounds amazing, and but they may not be ready to connect with like an access consciousness practitioner or an energy arts practitioner, what are two or three things that you would suggest to them to start really leaning into understanding their true nature? And I'm guessing one of those would be turn your awareness to what excites you. I think that's so gorgeous.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
And what else would you say to people who are stirred by this but not quite ready to pick up the phone?
So I would say, so of course, pay attention to what excites you. That's a big one. And pay attention to what feels light and heavy, you know, to you. It's like start to really listen to what makes you expand and what makes you contract. What makes you feel light, what makes you feel heavy. Just start listening and observe. Like, oh, that makes me feel light. I note that. I take note. And, oh, that contracts me. Okay, take note of that also. Without judgment, if possible, that's better. And maybe also play with intent, you know, like have an intent, a simple one, and just play with it and hold it for a few days and see where it leads you, you know. And a big one for me was to go from conclusion to questions, like become aware when you have conclusions in your head. Like really, that could be the intent you play with, is say, okay, I'm gonna be aware now of what contracts me, but also when I'm in a conclusion. So that's my intent, and I'm just going to hold it for a few days and see where that leads me.
Yeah, you know? beautiful. That sounds, we've talked about this before, that sounds a lot like Byron Katie's work as well, that gorgeous turning conclusions into questions, so you keep it open and you keep it moving and you don't lock down, you know, half-truths and what's the word, sort of half-perceptions. Yeah, absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, and there's a beautiful question that I ask myself often is, what else is possible here that I haven't chosen yet? How does it get any better than that, you know? Like really say, okay, what else is possible here? And really be open to receive information without any attachment to when, what, how. But just say, like a kid, like, oh, I wonder what else is possible here I had never chosen yet, you know?
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. I love that your use of the word order as well. I use the words spiritual experiment with my clients. I'll say, well, we're just going to do a spiritual experiment just for the next 3 weeks, and you're going to walk through the day with a sense of wonder as if you've only seen it for the first time in that very moment. And let's just see what happens, you know. And we do these because I think if you frame it, it's difficult for some people to go, I'm going to have that perspective for the rest of my life. But it's much easier if you say, we're going to play with it for a couple of weeks and let's see what happens, you know. And it's
totally,
it seems easier. But all of these things that you're talking about are super beautiful. And also much easier to do if you're well, if your life is good. Much harder to do if, for example, you live with chronic pain, or if you're very depressed, or if you're in a war zone. Would you say that they still all equally apply, or would you break it down even more for someone who's in a very restricted, very heavy life? What are some of the things that they can do?
Well, it's reconnect with love, you know, and maybe start to love themselves.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the heart is the most powerful tool we can access. So for me, the answer is love. Like, even if it's just having a bit more love for yourself today, a bit more love for somebody you see, a bit more love for the tree that's next to you, just a moment of love, a bit more love.
Yeah. And that's
a bit more love.
It's just that little bit that gets moving then. Yeah. They start the flow. That's beautiful. And so for you, Kalinka, I mean, you've always got so many projects and amazing things on the go. But what's next for you? You're about to launch Choose in a more substantial way out of testing. What else are you up to? What are you doing?
Oh, that takes quite a lot of my energy right now, the Choose program. And also there are many, many aspects to it, because there's a lot of creations, there's a big creative process linked to it. So I'm very happy to really put my energy into that and help people who are ready to work with me, or I can contribute to. I'm always happy to have that. And generally, I continue to open myself to higher level of vibrations and understanding and connection with the world, with life, with higher possibilities, you know.
Beautiful.
That's always my journey. Whatever comes my way.
With the creation of Shambhala on Earth.
Yes, exactly. That's my gig.
Yeah, I like your gig. I'm in the same gig. Kalinka Poulain-Jacobs, it's just always so fun to talk to you. And thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your perspectives on the modern crone. And you have a beautiful, beautiful day in the French Alps.
Thank you, honey. Always a pleasure talking with you too.
Speak soon. Bye.
Bye.